It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. It's been a half century since the early childhood education program Head Start was launched. Head Start was envisioned as a preschool-like program that offered health and nutrition services and ways for parents to get involved. But now, many parents and politicians are being drawn instead to state-funded pre-kindergarten programs. Today, as part of WESA's Life of Learning initiative, we're taking a look at various aspects of universal pre-K, talking with education experts and administrators about how universal pre-K works, where it's been tried, and how it could benefit children, schools, and communities in Pittsburgh and throughout the Commonwealth. I'm joined now in Studio A by Michelle Figler, Executive Director of the Pittsburgh Association for the Education of Young Children. Michelle Figler, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me here.
Also with us is Bob McCall, Co-Director of the University of Pittsburgh Office of Child Development. Bob McCall, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Great to be here.
If you have a comment or question, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Let's start with the basic question here. What is universal pre-K? Michelle, ladies first.
Sure. I can start us off. Universal pre-K, as we defined it here in the state of Pennsylvania and for the city of Pittsburgh, is an opportunity for all children to have access to high-quality pre-K. When I say all children, I mean children who are 3 and 4 years old, so that they can have access to the highest quality program. It doesn't replace Head Start. It doesn't replace what's happening in a child care program. It's simply about getting children into the highest quality experience.
What is the difference between pre-K and Head Start?
So the easiest way to answer that is that there's a different funding stream to pay for each of those, and there's often a different eligibility for families. So Head Start is serving the most at-risk families in our community. They serve families who are living below 100% of poverty. Okay, so this is a family that's really in need of services, and they wrap around total comprehensive programs for families. Pre-K for All or universal pre-K strategies are about leveraging what we know about what's best in Head Start and expanding that out to other children. So the average cost of pre-K here in the city of Pittsburgh can be up to $800 a month. What universal pre-K strategies are looking at is how do we get access for the children who don't qualify for Head Start, don't qualify for child care subsidy, and their family just can't afford access to pre-K. So it's broadening the strategy to impact more children.
And Bob McCall, it's more about in pre-K, more about cognitive development and language skills, is it not?
Well, not necessarily. That's the first thing people have looked at. So the question was, do these children learn readiness skills while they're in the program? And the answer to that is that, yes, they do. And children of all kinds, middle-class kids, dual language learners, kids with mild and moderate disabilities do learn literacy, language, and numeracy skills.
In pre-K.
However, opponents of pre-K have often argued that they lose these skills when they go to school. Well, that's not quite true. It is the case that children who are not in preschool, when they do go to school, they gain the same skills. And so the difference between those who had preschool and those who did not gets smaller. But it isn't that the pre-K kids lose what they learned. It's that their advantage over non-preschool kids diminishes. Now, the second issue, which is not necessarily cognitive development, are the long-term outcomes, which are quite clear and quite profound. So children who've had preschool, and this includes Head Start, but it includes other kinds, are more likely to avoid special education. They're more likely to graduate. They are more likely to have better paying jobs. They have less unwanted pregnancies. They get more years of education. and they tend to stay out of delinquency and crime.
And we want to look at some of the measurables for a pre-K, and we will do that as the program proceeds. We do want to work callers into the conversation at 412-246-2002. So let's go to James in Lawrenceville. And James, you are on with Michelle Figler and Bob McCall.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. Go ahead with your comment or question.
As someone who's personally been through a Head Start program, early intervention and things, and as well as gone on working on a second master's now, I really do feel that the attestment to the just lifelong effects of having an early intervention Head Start type program truthfully are profound. And then it just the argument over early pre-K, Head Start, whatnot, kind of makes me look at the European model where, from what I understand, early intervention really is universal, and then kind of brings into the whole child care versus the religious debates and everything with abortion, keeping children, and just, I guess, overall is maybe comparatively to the European model, how would that model really
The U.S.? What is the European model, as far as you know?
From what I understand, it's just what universally early intervention child care is guaranteed to any family regardless of income.
So I can jump in, and I think that what we know about other countries, especially countries in Europe, they've put significant investments in a family's well-being. So many of these programs, from the time a mom gets pregnant, are really invested in how do they help the well-being of the family. It's important to note that a pre-K strategy is part of an overall strategy for our children prenatally, until they get to the kindergarten door. I think you're right in saying that United States is behind many countries in investing in our youngest children. Pennsylvania is behind many of the states right around us. If you look at what New York's doing, West Virginia, just an hour away, Washington, D.C. Here in Pennsylvania, while we've made significant increases over the past 10 years, we're still only spending 0.6 of our overall budget. I think you're right that we have to push as voters show in recent polling that they support these programs. We have to push to say that this is important to us as Pennsylvanians.
Bob, you wanted to make
I think there's some ambiguity about the phrase universal preschool. Universal access to preschool is probably what is meant most often.
Absolutely.
But people can believe that the government should pay for everybody's preschool education. And that is not necessarily what's being pushed here. I think the issue is that lower-income children simply cannot afford to get into preschools or to pay the bills. And so some financial help is going to be needed to help these children have access. But it is a political decision as to how you fund this, and a sliding scale of support is probably going to be the most likely outcome, assuming we get something like this.
If there are waiting lists or for whatever reason children are not able to go to get into a universal pre-K program or a pre-K program right away, can we even call it universal pre-K?
So I think, again, I think we want to not focus so much on universal, and we want to focus on access, right? So if a child is waiting and a family can't get a child into to a preschool program, then, of course, we have to do more to broaden our reach, right?
But universal is the goal, right?
Well, I think that the goal is access. I want to agree with Bob. There are different funding strategies. When we say universal, first of all, none of us are advocating that every child must go to preschool, right? We're not mandating preschool. Families will choose whether that's what they want for their child or not. We would like to get to a point that maybe in 5 years, 10 years, that it could be universal. But this would take significant ramp up. And the strategies are always about how do we reach the most at-risk children first? How do we reach the families who are falling between the cracks? There are many middle-income families that just can't afford a slot. So the strategy is about getting to those families who need it most. It will not happen overnight. I mean, it will take time to both get the money into the programs, the money to families, and to ramp up our own capacity to make it happen.
What about the critics who call this glorified babysitting?
Well, it's certainly not babysitting if you want the outcomes that I just described. This is a professional endeavor. This is not simply babysitting. You don't get the kinds of long-term benefits out of simple babysitting. And this is one of the issues because the crucial element here is the quality of the program. And the higher the quality, the better the outcomes. And the irony here is that the group that Michelle just referred to is the group that can benefit most from this kind of a program.
Right. And I'll just add that when we talk about quality, one of the biggest factors of quality, there are several factors. Bob can talk about them. But the number one thing on that list is a highly qualified teacher. So when we're looking at investing in more pre-K, whether it's a Head Start funding stream or a pre-K funding stream or a high-quality child care slot, we have to invest in the teacher who is there with that child. And what we're saying is that we want this teacher to have a bachelor's degree. We want this teacher to have experience in pedagogy with young children. It's very different being in a classroom of a 3- and 4-year-old than in a 5th-grade classroom. And we need class sizes to be small, and we need supports. That teacher needs a teacher assistant. I invite people to come and visit a high-quality preschool classroom, and there is so much teaching and learning happening there. You'll know immediately it's not babysitting.
Coming up, our look at universal pre-K continues with a discussion about programs in Pittsburgh and the Commonwealth. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. On this Life of Learning special, we're exploring the expansion of universal pre-K and the benefits of an early start to a child's learning experience. What are cities and states doing to make pre-K more accessible? And what is the role of the federal government?
So it's a $250 million grant competition across the country. We absolutely hope Pennsylvania comes in with a very, very strong application. It will be competitive. But the need in places like Pittsburgh are pretty significant, but also is it manageable? You can get your arms around it.
That was U.S. Secretary of Education Arne Duncan, who announced in Pittsburgh Wednesday that Pennsylvania could receive as much as $20 million to expand access to pre-K programs. Dr. Cassette Grant Overton, the manager of educational policy and workforce development for the city of Pittsburgh, moderated a 2-day forum at the Hill House at which Secretary Duncan made that announcement. Dr. Grant Overton, welcome to Central Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me.
And continuing with us is Michelle Figler, Executive Director of the Pittsburgh Association for the Education of Young Children. And you can join our conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM. On Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Michelle Figler, has universal pre-K been attempted in Pittsburgh?
So let me start with what's been attempted in the state, if that's okay. So Pennsylvania's investments in pre-K have been increasing over the past 10 or 12 years. What's important to remember that is the money to date has come both from the federal government and to the state into the city of Pittsburgh. The state of Pennsylvania has a very strong pre-K program. It's what we call pre-K counts. So that's part of the state budget. We're only serving 1 out of 6 children, though, in the state right now with public dollars for pre-K. So while it's been supported across the aisle, we have great bipartisan support, we haven't been able to get the resources into the state and into the city to make this happen. We have launched what we're calling a pre-K for PA campaign that is really about increasing the revenue to serve more children in the state of Pennsylvania. That benefits the city of Pittsburgh. That money comes into the city of Pittsburgh. We have very robust and wonderful programs here with the Pittsburgh Public Schools, private child care providers, with some both for-profit, nonprofit, Council of Three Rivers, American Indian Center. All this money comes in and is blended together to serve as many children as possible. What this federal money does is it really helps to help us fill the gap. It is a great opportunity. And the other thing that's exciting about it is if the state agrees to take this money, which we really hope they do, and we're going to be pushing for that, then they can say a portion of this money is going to come right into the city of Pittsburgh. So it's a really unique and innovative strategy. And I think with the leadership of the mayor's office and with the advocacy we're doing at the state level to increase state dollars, Pittsburgh is poised to really wrap our arms around our 5,700 preschoolers and get access for all children, just like we talked about.
Dr. Grant Overton, Mayor Bill Peduto has made a call for universal pre-K. He did that as a candidate. So what has been the follow-up?
The follow-up is that he met with President Barack Obama in December, and he asked the president to consider making Pittsburgh a laboratory for early childhood education. And that includes universal pre-kindergarten. Specifically, birth to school age is the focus, so that every child has an opportunity for equity to access for high-quality early education.
So when you talk about birth to the workforce or to graduating from college, whatever the goal might be, what is the research that you're relying on that tells you that this works for four-year-olds and in some cases even three-year-olds?
Well, research, study after study, shows that in pre-K studies that 25%, provided that they're exposed at an early age to high-quality education, that 25% are less likely to drop out of school. You have a less teen pregnancy rate. You have lower crime rates. You have more self-esteem and motivation for wanting to go on and continue on to post-secondary education and be contributing citizens to society. It helps our economic, and they are able to make more of a contribution to our economy.
Yeah. Could I jump in and say, as a city, I think, you know, of course, as a early childhood advocate, I always want to talk about why it's good for children and families. But as a city, there is probably no better investment in both the short term economic development and the long term. There's been recent study from the Economy League that shows for every dollar you invest in early childhood education today, you get immediate return of $1.79. So that's more revenue coming into the city. Secondly, there is long-term. For every dollar invested, you get from a $7 to $17 return on that investment. So while it's hard sometimes for me to talk about the money of this, this is a smart way for us to invest our money. We are going to see that return. When we talk to the Allegheny Conference, they tell us about the jobs right here in this city that can't be filled today because we don't have the workers we need. If we invest on the front end, the city will have the workers they need to be able to keep people in the city, work in the city, live in the city.
So in a sense, it really is a birth to the workforce program, even though technically we're talking about birth to school age. And while Pittsburgh leaders are planning a birth to school age program, New York City will begin its pre-K program in a few weeks. Josh Wallach from New York City's Department of Education is leading the implementation of the program. Mr. Wallach told Essential Pittsburgh that in his first year, 50,000 four-year-olds will participate in free full-day pre-kindergarten at a variety of locations.
We have a very rich and diverse set of pre-kindergarten providers. So that includes district public schools. It includes charter schools. It includes community-based organizations throughout the city, some of whom are specialized in early education, some of whom provide other social services. We also work with museums and other cultural institutions that provide pre-kindergarten. It really runs the gamut, but all of them meet the highest quality standards.
And again, that was Josh Wallach from New York City's Department of Education. Cassette Grant Overton and Michelle Figler, you visited New York last month to get a firsthand look at the preparation for that city's pre-K initiative. What did you learn that might be useful for a pre-K program here in Pittsburgh? Michelle?
So the first thing I learned, I mean, it was an amazing visit. The first thing I learned is that we have a lot less children to serve, so that's extremely good news. I'm glad that we are the right size city to take something like this on, so we have much smaller numbers. Secondly, the mayor's office, and I am so confident that Mayor Peduto will have the same strategy. The mayor's office had said this is a priority for the city of New York. The mayor's office did everything they can to make sure that they could, that families knew about the programs, that they could qualify families, that they could get programs up and running. So they cut through the red tape. It is difficult to run a preschool program, right? It takes a lot of bureaucracy. The mayor said, we are going to make this a priority, and we're all going to focus. All city departments are going to focus on getting children into programming. The third thing I learned, that it's really, really important to talk to families. They cannot be left out of this conversation. We have to hear in the city of Pittsburgh, we have to listen to our families to say, what do you need? Is 6 hours a day the right time length? Where are the preschools? How will you get your child there? Transportation is a challenge here. We don't hop on a subway and take our kids to school. We're going to need to figure out how we get kids to programs. But we have to listen to families. We have to listen to what they need. And then finally, that it has to be a diverse delivery model, just like Josh talked about. This is both about the Pittsburgh Public Schools, but the child care programs, the private nursery schools that we have here. This is about all of us working together.
And we had Bill Peduto on this program on Wednesday, and he made the comment that Pittsburgh has the opportunity to create the model for early education for the rest of the country, but can we do this, and how do we do it if other states and other cities like New York are already doing it? Cassette?
Thank you very much. Well, similar to what's going on in New York, the mayor has the opportunity to use his bully pulpit to not only continue his conversations at a federal level, but also at a state level. And additionally, that means leveraging or garnering support from our local corporations. Pittsburgh is very rich in being a very tight-knit and close community, and we have a wealth of resources here. So in addition to that, similar to what has happened in New York City, is to work with our local corporations, foundations, and universities, and in order to look for ways in which to support dollar-wise and resource-wise, this effort.
In the meantime, there are thousands of kids in Pittsburgh who do not have any pre-kindergarten education at all. What can be done for them?
What can be done for them is continuing to look for resources at the state level, and hopefully continue to use his position. And being that this is a priority of the mayor for the city of Pittsburgh, to continue to challenge and work within the city and all the way on up to the federal level to leverage support.
Michelle, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I'll just add to that I know the reality here. I know that school's going to start in about 2 weeks. I know there are many four-year-olds, many families out there saying, but there's nothing for my child come September 1st. Here's what I say. I think this is a very robust city. I think opportunities to go to the library, go to the Children's Museum, go to the Science Center. Those things are accessible to all families. Families have access to these programs. Take advantage of some of the really innovative things that are happening here through the Kidsburgh Network. Read to your child. Talk to your child. Go to the library. I know that there may not be a slot for you this year, but we are working really, really hard to get slots in the future. It takes all of this to really make it work, and families are critical. And this city has some amazing things for families.
And if you'd like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002 is the number to call. We're talking with Dr. Cassette Grant Overton, the Manager of Educational Policy and Workforce Development for the City of Pittsburgh. Also, Michelle Figler, Executive Director of the Pittsburgh Association for the Education of Young Children. On the phone, we have Aubrey in Pittsburgh who has a question. Aubrey, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've had the opportunity to work with Michelle as a teacher at an early childhood center in the South Hills and with her children at the Science Center through camps, and she's absolutely right about the wonderful programs we have here in Pittsburgh. My question is, how do we address the need for compensating highly qualified teachers to work in these pre-K programs? And we want these teachers to have bachelor's degrees and continue professional development. And there is nothing I would love more than to work with pre-K students and in a child care center. But it's simply not feasible for me in terms of livelihood in this area. So I just wanted to hear what your guest had to say, Paul, about that issue. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you, Aubrey. And it is important, I'm sure, for everybody who is involved or has an interest in this, that that there are quality teachers in place. And in order to do that, it takes funding. So, Michelle, you're nodding your head. What do you know about this?
Absolutely. Thanks, Aubrey. As an organization that represents our members who are early childhood teachers, I think what's most critical about these plans as we think about a pre-K for PA or pre-K for all, there has to be enough money in coming into a program that can compensate that professional. So that's the key there. When we're asking for a high-quality pre-K program, we have to be able to pay for the true cost of care. Right now, what happens is in our system through the child care subsidy system is that providers don't get paid the true cost of care. They're barely getting 75% of the market rate. So then teacher salaries remain low. The average salary is still only between $8 and $9 an hour. In our state-funded pre-K program, the salaries are higher because we get more per child. As I look at this national proposal, it's similar there. There will be enough money coming in per child so that teachers can have higher compensation. I just want to say, though, that it's important as we think about a birth to kindergarten strategy in this city, we have to think about fully funding the cost of care, because until we do that, we will never be able to keep very talented teachers like Aubrey in our program. So it is crucial that teacher salary is part of the cost of care.
According to the National Institute for Early Education Research, 40 states have state-funded pre-K programs. Georgia was the first state to do so. 84,000 children are enrolled in the program, which has a budget of $300 million funded by state lottery revenues. Susan Adams is the assistant commissioner for Universal Pre-K in Georgia, which began 22 years ago.
Georgia recognized the need to have high-quality preschool experiences for young children and the importance that they had for getting children ready for kindergarten, but also looking at early brain development around cognitive but also social skills. And really, the pre-K program was built to be a foundation and as an entry point for kids to our K-12 system. And that vision has been really kind of unwavering over the course of the 22 years of the program. We feel strongly that research supports that all children benefit from a high-quality pre-K experience.
Adams says that they serve about 60% of the age-eligible children. There are waiting lists due to budgetary reasons and availability of high-quality programs in parts of the state. Michelle Figler, our state, we mentioned this earlier, our state has a pre-K program. It's not universal. As we look at Georgia in terms of a model, can we get to that point here in Pennsylvania? How far away are we?
Absolutely. So Pennsylvania's model is actually very, very, very highly rated. So Pennsylvania pre-K counts meets all of the NEAR standards, practically all of them, right? It actually is serving more children when you look at our eligibility than most of the states. Pennsylvania has said that children below 300% of poverty are eligible for our state-funded pre-K counts program. So that's a family that maybe is making about $60,000 a year. It's a great model. What our struggle has been is that we're only investing 0.6% 6% of our overall budget. We are still only serving 1 out of 6 eligible children. We have a good program. We need more resources to serve more children.
And I have some funding questions for you, sure. But I want to work Cassette Grant Overton back into the conversation. Would a Pittsburgh pre-K program be completely independent of the state, or would it work with the state?
The mayor envisions that this be focused in the city of Pittsburgh, but obviously we would work with the state of Pennsylvania to make this a reality.
Governor Corbett is asking the state legislature to provide $10 million more for pre-K programs. Is this enough support?
No, it's absolutely not enough. It's a great start, and we thank, you know, we are thankful for that additional dollar. We'll be able to serve a couple thousand more children, but it is not enough investment. What our Pre-K for PA campaign about is about pushing this. We will never get to the point of access for all eligible children or for all children at the rate that we're going. It is good, though, that we're making these small increases, but the time is now to say we've got to make a big increase here because we are leaving so many children. I don't even say behind.
What do we do to make it more equitable?
So tell me what you mean by that.
To make sure that everybody gets the same opportunity. You mentioned earlier we want there to be access.
Right.
So, but not everybody has the same access. So how do we make it more? Again, I go back to the word equitable, so that it's fair for everybody and every child has the same opportunity.
Right. So voters have said in a recent poll that this is important to them across the aisle, bipartisan. That it's important that they say they would have their taxes raised. I think it's time for us to work with the legislature to say, how do we think about raising revenues here in the state of Pennsylvania so that it is equitable, so that all children have access? So that means working with the legislature, who, by the way, bipartisan support for the programs. But we have to find a revenue stream, and that's going to be working with them to figure out what's best for the state of Pennsylvania. But we are going to have to raise revenue to make it happen.
And to add on to that, onto Michelle's comments, is that the mayor's office understands that this is a major undertaking, and that there are many challenges to making it equitable based on the lack of financial resources thus far. However, we do have hope. And the mayor has commissioned a consortium focused on early childhood education, providing high quality education and looking for ways to be strategic in our processes and working collaboratively across the city, including working with our federal partners. We have the U.S. Department of Education and National League of Cities who have joined this consortium, so it's becoming a national consortium. We also have our state partners as well, who will be helping us to brainstorm and look at specific ways of how we work towards this end and providing and moving closer towards that equity.
Dr. Cassette Grant Overton is the manager of educational policy and workforce development for the city of Pittsburgh. Thank you so much for joining us as we wrap up this segment. We'll continue on with Michelle Figler. And coming up, how do you measure the success of universal pre-K? It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's a WESA Life of Learning special on Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're discussing the growth of universal pre-K programs as well as plans for a Pittsburgh initiative. But where they've been in place for several years, are they successful, is the question we are going to try to answer within this final segment. Maybe one of the best ways to ascertain that success is to hear from the teachers who encourage the young children to learn. Ellen Smith is a retired kindergarten teacher with the Pittsburgh Public Schools. Ellen Smith, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you so much.
Ellen, can you tell when a child has had a quality pre-K learning experience?
Absolutely.
How do you tell?
Well, a child who's had a high-quality pre-K experience usually comes to kindergarten with a set of social skills that help them to just be ready for the academic piece. A child who has social skills is generally able to follow directions, able to pay attention, able to get along with peers, able to manage feelings about anger or frustration. And it just, it really is a set of skills that helps them to navigate everything that happens in kindergarten.
One of the biggest things that happens to a child attending kindergarten, if that is in fact their first time school experience, is anxiety.
Yes.
The kids are afraid. There are all these other children and other strangers, and there's a teacher, and she's in control at the front of the room, and that, or he, and that can be intimidating. Does the pre-K experience help to alleviate some or all of that?
I think it helps to alleviate a lot of that, because if a child has had the opportunity to be in some kind of a classroom situation before, where they're working with groups, where they're used to the routines that are a part of every quality pre-K situation, then even though kindergarten is new to them, there's still aspects of it that they've experienced before, and it's not completely foreign. So I think the opportunity for children to attend preschool does a lot to alleviate anxiety and fear.
And they are more ready to learn?
Absolutely.
Earlier in the program, we heard about New York City's Universal Pre-K program, which begins next month. Josh Wallach of the New York City Department of Education says he expects an immediate, multifaceted impact.
You're going to see parents reporting on what a wonderful experience their children are having in pre-kindergarten. I think right away also in neighborhoods, you're seeing some of these organizations hiring up new teachers and creating new career paths for early childhood professionals, and that's going to have a great impact on our city and on our neighborhoods. And then I think starting next year, you're going to see the results in kindergarten classrooms as this first cohort of pre-K kids moves into those settings. And we hear from those kindergarten teachers about how they're seeing the advances of those children. We're curious about that. And then, of course, the academic and other effects that you'll see from this will play out over a period of years as our children move through our K-12 system. And we do expect to see a lot of those improvements over a time frame that lasts years.
Josh Wallach of the New York City Department of Education rejoining us to talk about whether pre-K does meet its goals is Bob McCall, co-director of the University of Pittsburgh Office of Child Development, and Michelle Figler, executive director of PACE, the Pittsburgh Association for the Education of Young Children. You can join the conversation with a comment or question at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. 002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM. On Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Ladies and gentlemen, in places where universal pre-K exists, how have outcomes been tracked? Bob.
Well, the traditional method is to give them assessments, standardized assessments of emergent literacy, numeracy, language, and so forth. And those are indeed relevant. But I think, given what we just heard, there are more subtle characteristics that are more difficult to measure but may actually mediate the long-term results, which aren't so academic. That is, it is likely that these children, first of all, have some success in a learning environment. Success is a wonderful thing, and the experience of success can last a long time, and it leads to another characteristic, persistence. Persistence in the face of challenge. And one of the things that characterizes students who don't succeed is that they do not persist when challenged. And these kids are getting more, in the long term, more years of education. They're graduating at higher rates, etc. That requires persistence in the face of challenge. And the last thing is a perception of self-efficacy. Simply said, I can influence in a positive way my teacher, my classmates. I can have an effect. I am not a simple victim of everything around me and other people. And we know that that is very corrosive if that's your attitude. And we know that many very low-income children have that attitude. If you can counter those in preschool, and these are harder to measure, but there are measurements, these are the kinds of things that may show up in producing the long-term outcomes. And those outcomes that we've mentioned twice here already are very costly to society. That is, if you're in crime, if you don't graduate, if you don't hold a job, etc., this costs society. And that's why there is such a large financial benefit over the long term of preschool programs, because the disasters are very costly. And this prevents some of the disasters.
And what you're saying certainly sounds positive and wonderful, but you know, in terms of hard statistics, how do we know? What numbers are there? What data is there that shows us that there definitely is a tangible, measurable impact on students who have had some form of pre-K education as opposed to those who have not?
Well, there are numerous studies now. It used to be that there were only a few very small ones, and the critics of preschool would complain about that. Now it's different. There's 5 decades of research. We now have publicly funded programs where the kids are old enough now to measure these things. And so
it's showing up in test scores.
It's showing.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Yeah, I'll just add that Pennsylvania, in our state-funded pre-K program, pre-K counts, and in our high-quality childcare programs, has been collecting these data. We have Pennsylvania data that shows, and data about children here in the city of Pittsburgh, that when they attend a high-quality pre-K program, they go into kindergarten. Pittsburgh Public Schools can talk about how that child does on the DIBLs. That's a language and literacy screening, right? So they're already looking at those children right when they walk into that kindergarten door. We are now able to track children in kindergarten and then look at their reading levels in first grade, second grade, and third grade. I'm not saying that the PSSA is the only thing we should be looking at. We want to look at everything around a child. We want authentic assessment, but Pittsburgh has data about Pittsburgh's children, how they are better prepared walking into kindergarten, how they're doing on standardized tests, and how they're doing on authentic assessment. It's there.
Ellen, it looks like you wanted to chime in.
I agree. I just, from my own teaching experience, there's a huge difference between children who come in from high quality pre-K experience and children who haven't had that. So, there's data, and over the past 20 years, the research has demonstrated that children's emotional and social skills are linked to their early academic success, but it's what I've experienced in my career too.
412-246-2002 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation with Ellen Smith, who you just heard, a retired Pittsburgh Public Schools kindergarten teacher, Bob McCall, co-director of the University of Pittsburgh Office of Child Development, and Michelle Figler, who's been with us throughout the entire program, executive director of the Pittsburgh Association for the Education of Young Children. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. And so we just heard Ellen say, you know, I see these students come in at 5 years old, coming out of these pre-K programs. I see a definite impact and a measurable difference between those students and those who've not been exposed to any pre-K program. How do we know, looking at longer-term effects and results, how do we know that attainment of knowledge lasts longer with students who have had pre-education, pre-K education, and how long does that effect continue? Bob?
Well, some would argue, with good reason, that the benefits of preschool may be less on the academic side and more on some of these things that we've just talked about, such as efficacy, success, persistence, and so forth, because the academic skills that they learn soon get meshed with other academic skills that the school teaches and so forth. And so an early increment that you see tends to have diminishing effects over the years for those specific characteristics, but something like success and persistence can last a long, long time. I think it's important to look at what recent research is suggesting about the crucial element of a quality preschool. It's the interaction between the teacher and the child in a serve and return manner. That is, the teacher responds to the child, asks questions, goes back and forth with the child in a meaningful way. And this, even when it's not on academic subjects, it's simply a conversation, is the thing that seems to predict the child's academic success in school as well as anything that occurs in the preschool. And this is why it is the teacher, the training of the teacher, providing an environment in which there aren't too many kids so she can actually exercise her skills. But this is hard to teach. You need maybe videotapes to show the teacher how she's interacting, what she did well, what she could have done in that situation, and so forth. So it takes a little effort. This is hard to legislate or have a policy about, but the combination of good teacher training and the right structural experience is the best groundwork for this kind of quality.
We have just a couple minutes left, so everybody's going to have about 30, 40 seconds to answer this last question. You say the research, all of you agree that the research shows that pre-K programs are effective, that it's worth the investment, but is the general public, people without young children, taxpayers, are they literally going to buy into this idea?
I'll start off and say that there's been recent polling just a couple weeks ago that shows here in Pennsylvania that people with and without children say that this is important for Pennsylvania to invest in. So I say yes. I think now that we know that it's a long-term investment for our city, for our community, for our state, and that it's going to save us money in the long run, people say yes.
Thanks, Michelle. Bob, 40 seconds.
The business community likes this because it's going to create a better workforce. The military likes it because it creates a better recruiting class, and they have trouble with recruiting classes. And law enforcement likes it because it reduces crime and delinquency. Ordinarily, this is a bipartisan issue.
Ellen Smith.
Well, we need to have educated children to have a good society and a great culture. And children who are educated have a better quality of life because when you learn, you become fully who you are. So I think that it's incredibly important just because education is important. It makes society better for everyone. It makes individuals' lives more meaningful, along with all the other things that both Michelle and Bob had to say.
Ellen Smith is a retired Pittsburgh Public Schools kindergarten teacher. Bob McCall is co-director of the University of Pittsburgh Office of Child Development. And Michelle Figler, who's been with us throughout the entire program, is the executive director of the Pittsburgh Association for the Education of Young Children. Thanks to all of you for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
We've been looking at Universal Pre-K on this special edition of Essential Pittsburgh as part of our Life of Learning initiative. Until next time, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.